So, okay, welcome everyone. And what are your questions? Yeah.
Yeah. So, if you have questions, you can raise your hand, and then you can unmute to ask your question. Okay, John. Can. Okay, maybe John, you can go first.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Monte, for your generosity. I have a question about the sitting posture. I've only started listening to you in the last month, and the idea of investigating pain is new for me. So what I've done in the past, right now I sit for 3 hours in the morning, and I have learned how to sit cross-legged. I always sat in a chair for years and years, but in the last 4 years I learned to sit cross-legged, but I use a back support and some cushions under my knees. Anyway, I sit for the first hour and a half, I don't have pain. And then I start having pain an hour and a half, sometimes longer. So what I've always done is then I change posture. I get into a different posture, maybe put my legs out in front of me, and then I continue for the rest of my sitting period, another hour and a half or hour. But now that I've been listening to you and you say not to switch posture, is that what you're saying? I shouldn't change my posture, but I should investigate the pain. And that's been a big challenge for me. I don't know. I'm trying it. I had one session that sort of was a breakthrough, but otherwise I just have such intense pain. I changed my posture. So could you please advise me on that? And my sitting posture. Do I have to learn to sit without a back support? I'm working on it. I have an old 74-year-old body, and my back isn't that strong, but I'm trying.
It's okay with back support, yeah. So there shouldn't be any problem. The important thing is not the sitting posture. The important thing is that we are with the object. I mean, what do you take? Do you take the Buddha or do you take the breath?
The breath, mostly. I try the Buddha sometimes, but mainly the breath.
Okay, that's fine. I mean, either one, yeah. So the important thing is, yeah, I mean, you sit comfortable, yeah? As comfortable as possible, but not in a chair, yes. Cross-legged, you know, with a backrest, that is okay, yeah?
Okay.
And then you pay attention to the breath, yeah? I mean, you pay attention to the quality of the breath. That is mostly important, yeah? I mean, is the breath, in-breath long and the out-breath short, or the out-breath long, in-breath short? Is it rough? Is it detailed? I mean, look at the quality of the breath, yeah? You have to be absorbed in the quality of the breath. Is it the in-breath? Is it the out-breath? Is it switching from the in-breath to the out-breath? And switching from the out-breath to the in-breath. Try to nail down this point when it switches, actually. It is very interesting. Yeah? So the important thing is, yeah, to look at the object, you know, observe the object and know the quality of the object. Yeah? The sitting posture is secondary. Yeah? If you can change the posture, yeah, and then sit on for another one and a half hours or maybe 2 hours, that is also okay. But most of the time, why I say this, most of the time, I mean, the people change their sitting posture and then after 5 minutes, you know, they get up. Yeah? You understand that? Yeah? So, I mean, if you can sit on for another 1.5 hours, that is fine. Yeah? And with the investigation of pain, do the investigation of pain, yeah? I mean, when it's too much, you know, I'm okay, then switch to another sitting posture, yeah?
Okay.
Yeah?
Great.
And then try it out.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. And also, you know, I mean, with the pain investigation, yeah. I mean, today you can maybe do it 10 minutes and then each time you do it a little bit more, yeah. One breath more, or two breaths more, yeah. So that you prolong it, okay. You know, prolong it, you know. And we don't want to investigate pain to get rid of pain. We want to understand what is the nature of pain, yeah. So you do have to ask the right questions, yeah. Where is it, yeah? I mean, when you sit in front of your TV, I mean, there's no pain, yeah? Or? Yeah. Or when you sit, you know, and eat some food or have some conversation with your friends, you know, I mean, there's no pain, yeah? Or the pain only comes, you know, when you do meditation, you know? So, I mean, it's an interesting kind of pain, you know? So where is this pain, yeah? So look at it, you know, is it in the bones, is it in the flesh, is it in the muscles, is it in the tendons, is it in the skin? Where exactly is it, yeah? And then try to observe it, you know, you go with your attention or with your inner eyes to that spot of the pain, yeah? You go there and then look, yeah, to see, you know, where the pain actually arises, yeah? You will not be able to find it, but the closer you come, yeah, if you come very close to the truth of the pain, I mean, it shifts from one point to the other, just like when you listen to my talks, yeah? Okay, try this, yeah?
Okay, yes. Thank you for your generosity, Bhante. Yes. Thank you.
Welcome.
Okay, thank you, Joe. Jessica and Sarah.
Hello, Ajahn. Hello. Our question is, so we practice at a Thai monastery here in the U.S. And we wanted to know, how do your foreign monks or Falong monks learn Thai? Because we're trying to learn Thai so we can kind of better interact with the Thai community. And then most of our teachers here are Thai, and their English is developing.
Yeah.
So how do we, what is your suggestion for us to learn Thai?
What city are you in?
Right now we're in High Creek, Texas. But I'm from San Antonio.
San Antonio, Texas. So I mean the monastery is somewhere in Texas, huh?
Yes, in San Antonio. It's Guadamapucha.
Mm. How many Thai monks are there?
At Guadamapucha there's two. And then there's another monastery, a larger one in Keller, Texas. About 10.
Mm.
But in Dhammapucha, our abbot, his English is still developing, and the Thai community, there are some that speak English, and then there are some that don't.
Mm.
They speak only Thai. So we're trying to learn Thai for a couple of different reasons. Every time, like during like the rains, the abbots will give talks, but they're all in Thai.
Mm.
And so we really want to learn Thai so we can understand the abbots from like our sister temples. There's a few temples. There's one in Marble Falls, one here in Pike Creek, and then the one that is in San Antonio. All of their Dhamma talks are in Thai.
Mm.
So that's our reasoning for trying to learn. We just want to know, like, what's your suggestion to learn Thai?
Mm. I mean, get language tapes, yeah, or get books, you know, and that is, yeah, or get somebody, you know, who speaks fluently Thai, you know, and speaks English, you know, who can teach you, yeah. I mean, for us, you know, I mean, we have a teacher, you know, I mean, we have a lesson, you know, I mean, she gives us, you know, she gives us a lesson in Thai, yeah. So we learn how to read, learn how to write, yeah, and learn how to speak, yeah. I mean, the pronunciation will be the most difficult thing probably for you, yeah? I mean, the five different tones, yeah? And to be able to distinguish this, yeah, that is rather difficult. But on the other hand, Thai is actually quite an easy language to learn, yeah? Because it is a contextual language, yeah? It doesn't have the kind of grammar that, you know, English or other languages have, yeah? So it is rather easy to learn, you know, but it will take some time, especially with the tones, yeah? But, you know, I mean, if you, yeah, listen to the talks that are given, you know, to the talks that are given in English, yeah, I mean, for basic understanding, yeah. That is my suggestion, and on the side, you know, learn some Thai, yeah. Okay?
Thank you, Ajahn.
Anyone else with questions who can raise your hand? No? Yeah, Jivika, you can speak. Unmute yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You're still on mute. Jivika. Sorry about that. Thanks, Andy. Hello, Ajahn. This is Jio from Roha. My question is about the state of mind, I mean, state of, I guess, the citta in sleep. So, like, when I'm in, like, any of us are, like, in deep sleep, we don't have any sense of where we are or where, I mean, there's no sense at all, right? I mean, or I guess the same applies to anesthesia. Like where there's no awareness or nothing left. Like even in in access samadhi, you have the knowing. So what is the chitta? I mean, what is the state of the chitta in these kinds of, for lack of a better word, I use the word state, but I don't know, like, what is the state of the chitta in these kinds of state where you're in deep sleep or like where you're in under anesthesia?
If you are in the deep sleep, you know, it is similar, but it's not the same. Yeah? I mean, apana samadhi, I mean, I call it apana samadhi, is the state where the chitta is in union, yeah? It is one, yeah? With everything. Yeah? And it is very distinct. When you go in, it is one moment where you notice you go into the state, yeah? And the next moment, yeah? You know, you go out. But in the meantime, you know, from the beginning of going in to the end of going out, yeah, there can be hours passed, yeah. And when you come out, the only thing that you know is you haven't slept. You were awake, yeah. So what you experience there is the unity of the citta, yeah. Or it is called also, or Lungta Mahabho called it, you know, the privy of Nibbana, yeah. It is the knowingness, the pure knowingness, yeah? But knowingness that doesn't know objects, just is there, it's just there within itself, yeah? Well, you can call it eternity or whatever you want to call it, yeah? I mean, it is amazing when you come out, you know, I mean, you think, what happened, yeah? But you know that you were not asleep, yeah? And when you observed, you know, observe the time, you know, how long you were in, it can last for hours, yeah? Or it can even last for days, yeah? But the only thing that you know is you go in and then you come out, yeah. But the longer you have been out, yeah, or the longer you have been in the state, yeah, when you come out, you will notice, yeah, how yourself is created, yeah. Because in the beginning you don't know who you are, you don't know where you are, and you don't know what you're doing, yeah. So the self has to be recreated. Because at that time, you know, I mean, you're completely lost self, yeah? At that time, it has to use memory and thoughts, you know, to recreate the sense of self, who you are, what you're doing, and so on, yeah? That's why it is the state of mind is so amazing, yeah? I mean, it's really the preview of Nibbana, yeah? So, I mean, Try, if you can do it, you know, go in there, and when you come out, you know, look at it, how it is, because it everything happens in slow motion, yeah? I mean, the mind is so sharp that it gets every mind moment, yeah? And this is amazing, yeah? Every mind moment, you know, I mean, it catches on, it knows, it is aware of every mind moment. Actually, it might not take very long, you know, to get reoriented and to recreate yourself. But you see every step of it. Okay? In the sleep, in the deep sleep, you don't know anything. So, I mean, that's why it's not very useful, yeah? Yeah? But it, you get the same kind of rest, you know, normally the deep sleep, you know, lasts for an hour, for 1.5 hours, yeah? But you don't get the same experience, yeah? As when you go into the deep state of samadhi, yeah? Okay?
Thanks,
Ajahn. So, any other questions for me?
Anyone else would like to ask? Yeah,
you have another question?
Can I ask another question if nobody else?
Yeah, go ahead.
The question is related to something that you mentioned in in your talks, like, so when we see, let's say, is it, yeah, sometimes I mentioned that, like, when I'm seeing another person's hand, it is another person's hand, and when I'm seeing my hand, it is my hand. So, but we should see them the same way. But my question is that, like, we have a sense associated with our body, like, so I can feel the sensations in my hand and not the sensations in another person's hand. So, where does that distinction come from, like, I mean, because that is where association is, because there's a pain associated with the with the body that I'm in, and not the other person's hand that I see. So how do I see it as the way you are implying that we should see that this is the same, there is no difference?
When you see your hand, you see the hand. So that is seeing the rupa, yeah? When you feel the hand, that is vedana. You understand it? When you see the hand of another person, you see the hand, you know it's rupa, yeah? So, I mean, where is the difference between his hand and my hand? Because it is close to us, because we are able to move it, that's why we associate it with us, yeah? But we cannot change the body. You know, you have to think about, or you have to see the body, you know, it is something, you know, that has come out of the womb, yeah, grow up, you know, and get old and die, yeah? And this is something that you cannot change, yeah? So it is, even if you can feel it, you know, even if you can feel the body, it is still not you, yeah? Because there's something that knows that there is this body, yeah? I mean, when you drive your car, you can feel the car. You can feel the vibration of the car, yeah? But you would never associate you are the car, or? Yeah? And that's the same with the body, yeah? You can feel the body, you can move it, you know? I mean, you have the power over this body. You don't have the power over other bodies, yeah? That is clear. You don't have the power over other people's car, yeah? But it is the same thing. You have to retract to the one who knows, yeah? Who knows that there is a feeling, or who knows that there is seeing or hearing or whatever, because you perceive the hand or the body, yeah, mostly through seeing, yeah, but also through feeling, yeah. You can feel, yeah, you can feel the body, yeah. But who knows that there is a feeling? You have to ask these questions, yeah. Who knows that there is a feeling? Who knows that there is a thought? Yeah? And next time, you know, ask the thought, do you know your thought? So who puts the label onto a thought? Who puts the label onto a feeling? Who puts the label onto a memory? Yeah? Or even then, you know, who puts a label onto consciousness? Yeah? These are just labels that we learn from the beginning of our life, you know, from this life, yeah, and also the memory from previous life, yeah, we learn it, you know, okay, this is me, you know, this is my robot, yeah, I'm sitting in a robot, you know. Yeah, you can move this robot, but when this robot is broken, I mean, then you have to go and see the doctor, yeah. Huh? You cannot, you know, you cannot mend it, yeah. You can only wait until that the robot completely dies and needs to go to the scrapyard, yeah, and then you're free, yeah. But the problem with us is, you know, that we are that we are born in a car, you know, that we die in the car and never get out of the car. So we assume, of course, that we are the car, yeah. We can move the car, we can, you know, do this and do that and all these things, you know. The body is an amazing thing. I mean, it is a great, very creative tool, yeah. But we are so attached to this body that we have to learn how to detach, huh? To see, you know, I mean, see, you know, feeling. There is a feeling. So you say, there is a feeling. There's the body, there's the hand, you know, there's the leg, you know, or whatever you see. When you look in the mirror, there's the face, there's the eyes, there's the nose, yeah? Not me, yeah? It's not my nose, you know, there is a nose, and there's the eyes, yeah? And there's the ears, and whatever, yeah? There's the torso, yeah? So then you slowly detach, you know, from the association that the body, you know, and the self are the one and the same thing. The self is created out of these five khandhas, yeah? You have to understand that, yeah? And that's why I said, you know, it is very helpful, you know, to go into deep samadhi to see how the self is created, yeah? there you see it, you know, and actually, you know, before that, you know, I mean, you still existed. You know that you still existed, yeah? But, of course, you cannot, you cannot make any association. Because one-pointedness is one point, you know, I mean, you cannot say anything about what is happening in this one-pointedness, yeah? Okay, understood, yeah?
Understood, thanks, Ajahn.
Mm.
Anyone else with questions?
Yes, don't be so shy, you know, ask the questions that are on your heart, yeah? Or do you just want to see me?
And then there's a question in the Zoom chat, so let us read that first.
Okay.
Dear Ajahn Martin, thank you for guiding us patiently. My question is, when I meditate, I use Anapanasati. Then when I sense increasing pain arising in my leg, sometimes I switch to Metta meditation, and I get into a state of peace and the pain went away. So I switch between Metta meditation and Anapanasati, as long as I can sit and meditate as long as possible, which can be slightly more than 2 hours. Can Ajahn guide me if I'm on the right track? With gratitude, Ross.
Well, you're on the right track when you think about it as the Western kind of meditation. Yeah, you're on the wrong track, you know, if you think, you know, this is the way. No, we don't want to avoid pain. And we don't want to mix up. Yeah? I mean, this doing the metta, you know, getting into a peaceful state of mind, yes, it is helpful. But, you know, it's a peaceful state of mind. Yeah? What we want to do is, yeah, with the Anapanasati, get the mind completely calm until thoughts and memories stop. Yeah? To get the mind concentrated, you know, more or less, you know, concentrated on one point. So we need this power of the mind, you know, to later on to investigate. And one thing that we start investigating when we do Anapanasati, yeah, is pain. Yeah? Just like I explained it before. Yeah, I mean, how do we investigate pain? We go with our attention instead of the breath, we go with our attention to the point of pain. Yeah. And then we see, yeah, anicca, anatta, dukkha, yeah. So we see, you know, anicca, yeah, it is impermanent. Sometimes it's stronger, sometimes it's not so strong, yeah. Anatta, you know, whatever I see, whatever I feel, you know, there's a feeling. Just like I explained before, there's a feeling. So who knows about this feeling? So it is anatta, yeah. And dukkha, of course, you know, it is painful, yeah? It's dukkha. Yeah? And then we look, you know, then we look, yeah? Is it point-wise? Is it area-wise? Where exactly is it? Is it, you know, is it in the skin? Is it in the flesh? Is it in the tendons, yeah? And we have to ask ourselves, yeah? Why does it only happen when I sit in meditation? Why doesn't it happen when I sit 11 hours on a flight, you know, to this country or that country, or 4 hours? Or why doesn't it happen when I sit, you know, and have a conversation with my friends? Or when I eat, you know, when I sit longer, yeah? Or when I watch TV, or when I watch a movie? Why doesn't it happen there? Why is there not such a strong pain? So the investigation of the pain is the sharpening, is a sharpening stone of our knife for investigation, yeah? For wisdom. Yeah? We need that later on, you know, to, for instance, to investigate feelings. Yeah? Feelings, you know, are more difficult to investigate. But the bodily feeling, yeah, there's a mental feeling. The bodily feeling is easier to investigate because it stays on there for a long time. You should be actually happy, yeah, because you have a very, very stable meditation object. Not like the breath that constantly disappears or the Buddha that disappears, you know, and we have to bring it back. No, the pain stays on. So we can really concentrate on the pain, yeah? And if you want to do metta meditation, that is fine, but then only do metta meditation. If you do anapanasati, then do only anapanasati. And for anapanasati, or the Buddha meditation, the only exception when the pain becomes so strong that we cannot concentrate on the Buddha or on the breath anymore, then we are allowed to investigate. We don't want to mix these things up because we don't get any results. Eh? We want to know what is calm meditation, how does it feel, you know, where does it lead to. We want to know what is investigation that leads to wisdom. And for investigation that leads to wisdom, we have to ask questions, yeah? The right questions. So what is pain? How does it feel like? Feel the pain. We always avoid pain, and that's why you go in metta meditation, and that's not good, yeah? We want to understand what is pain, yeah? Because at the moment of death, you will have to face pain, yeah? Well, most of the time in your life, you will have to face pain where you can't evade, yeah? So don't evade, yeah? Don't evade the pain. Face the pain, you know? If you can't take it anymore, then raise the white flag and say, okay, Kilesas, I can't take it anymore, it's too strong, yeah? I get up or do something else, yeah? Be aware, you know, huh? I mean, the meditation, you know, I mean, our kind of meditation in the Theravada tradition, or here in the tradition of Lumpuman, yeah? Is a spiritual warrior. We are fighting, yeah? We are fighting, you know, so we want, yeah? And when we have to retreat, we are clear that we have to retreat. Yeah? There's no problem with retreating. There's no problem with giving up. But not just giving up, you know, by doing this or doing that. Know that we are giving up. This is really important, yeah? Okay, I lost. I lost this battle, yes? And we will lose so many battles, yeah? But each time, you know, there's a nice example. There's a nice example that Lungta Mahabua always brought, yeah? He compared meditation with going into the boxing ring with the champion, yeah? The champion is Avijja, yeah? So, I mean, you go in the boxing ring, he instantly kicks you out, yeah? So you go again in, yeah? I mean, you constantly lose, yeah? You go again in, he kicks you out again. You go again in, he kicks you out again, and so on, yeah? Until you can stay a little bit longer, and then you can observe, you know, how the champion deals his blows, yeah? And then the first time happens, you know, where you can duck one of these goals, yeah? One of these blows, yeah? And then the next stage is, you know, where you can give the champion a blow, yeah? And that is very interesting, because he will be knocked out, yeah? For a while, yeah? Maybe for an hour, maybe for a day, yeah? And then he comes back, yeah? And then you see how it is, you know? How it is when you stand in the boxing ring with nobody, you know, attacking you. Because we are attacked all the time, yeah? We are attacked constantly by our thoughts, by our memories. This I should do, this I should like, this I don't like, this, yeah? This person is good, you know, that person is not good. he constantly attacks us, yeah? So we should know these things, yeah? We should not mix up investigation, yeah, and anapanasati. Leading to calm, anapanasati is calm meditation or samatha meditation. In samatha meditation, we just want to have calm. Hmm? If you want to do metta meditation, that is fine, yeah, but there's no point in it. Metta is in the heart, yeah? It's always there. Yeah? You just have to look. That's where it is. Yeah? People in the West often, you know, produce, have a certain understanding of what matter is, you know, and then they spread it throughout the whole world. Yeah, but that is their, just their imagination of matter. Yeah? Matter is in the heart. If you want to see, everything is in the heart. Happiness in the heart. Peacefulness is in the heart. If you want to really know the truth, feeling of happiness, then you go into the heart, there it is. If you want to know the true feeling of peacefulness, there it is, in the heart, yeah? That's where you go. Hope it is understood, yeah?
Yeah, so Ross, if you have any follow-up questions, feel free to ask. So, there's another question from Jessica and Sarah. Can you go ahead?
Once again, and again, my question is in regards to checking the mind for lying, in regards to lying to itself. Keyless can be very sneaky, so if without awareness one can unintentionally break precepts just because they are not aware of their true intentions, so what is there a set of questions that you recommend for one to check, just to constantly check themselves to make sure that they are doing the right thing?
Sila, Samadhi, Panya. So these are the three things that is the way out of dukkha. Sila are the five precepts. Samadhi is the ability to concentrate. And wisdom is the ability to understand what is going on. All these three, yeah, you cannot develop only sila. Yeah? You need samadhi to be able to see what is going on, where you make your mistakes. Yeah? Without this sati, without this awareness, you will not be aware. So you will have to raise the level of samadhi to be able to be aware of what is going on in your heart. Yeah? But you also have to raise the level of panya, of wisdom, yeah, to be able to understand that what you just did, you know, was not right. Yeah? Because samadhi alone does not show you if it was right or wrong. Yeah? It's your heart that knows if it was right and wrong. Yeah? So I mean you have to develop all these three faculties. Yeah? I always say, you know, I mean it is building our way to freedom is building a house on three columns, yeah? Sila, Samadhi, and Panya. Only if it is, you know, raised at the same kind, at the same time, yeah? More or less at the same time. So Sila is raised, yeah? Samadhi is raised, and Panya is raised. Then you will understand. Then your awareness will catch up, yeah? But for the beginning, yeah? Last time I was talking, I think in the last talk, you know, I gave, was talking about the daily reflection. Within the daily reflection, if you do that in the evening, you will know where you went wrong or where you were okay, yeah? So I mean, do the daily reflection, yeah? But as I mention often, yeah? Or as I say often, don't judge. Don't judge if it was good or bad. Let the heart decide if it was good or bad, yeah? Don't put a label on it. This was good, this was bad, yeah? The only label that you can put on, this I did not see very clearly, let's try to be more aware the next day, yeah? Okay?
Thank you. Anyone else has questions to us? Actually, I move on to the questions submitted online.
Mm-hmm.
I just read out. Okay. So, First question. After an acute illness, I was hospitalized for 5 days. I witnessed sickness and OH in all their glory. I noticed that my mind reacted with denial and ignorance, seeing the inevitability of it all. Yet now, after full recovery, I notice I lack motivation to practice. There's no urgency to practice, yet I know there should be. How do I overcome this? Any suggestions? Best regards. Many thanks for your thoughts.
He should go, you know, somewhere where he can feel the dukkha. Yeah, that is our motivation. I mean, either you know, I mean, either he recalls his life. Being born. When we are born, what is the first thing that we do when we come out of the womb? And we start to breathe. And then we learn how to move this body. And then we learn how to walk. Then we learn how to talk. Then we go to school for 9 years. And then sometimes to university for 4 to 6 years before we actually can use this body. And then how long can we use this body? 30 years where it has really full strength. From maybe 16 to 46 or 40. Or 20 to 50, And then from then on, you know, the strength of the body decays. So, and all our life we are working for this body. I mean, 99% of our time is concerned about this body. Having food, you know, having sleep, you know, having clothes, having medicines, and having somewhere to live, So we pour all our effort, all our energy that we have, that comes with the body, we pour into, you know, maintaining this body. And in the end, you know, this body decays and dies, So, I mean, what is the purpose of our life, Is this, Because in the next life, when we are so fortunate to become a human being again, then we have to do this over and over again. And it is not the first life as a human being. It is not the first life that we have to train this body for such a long time. Each time, you know, when we become a human being, we have to train it. Once the training is finished, after 18 years, then we have to work for this body. In the first 18 years, our parents look after you, Or after us, And then we have to work for this body. But what is the purpose of this life? Working for this body. And these few hours that we have for our attainment, what do we do? I mean, we spend now with our smartphones, I mean, ticking away, and nobody notices, how much excitement, be it positive excitement or negative excitement, comes through this activity, I mean, just reading the comments on your last message, sometimes you're excited and the next time you get angry. Why do you do this to yourself? You never ask yourself, You play around, or you play games, your video games, or you watch TV, I mean, you waste your time, you kill your time, You can't wait to die, that's why you have to kill the time, because you can't, it is not fast enough that you die, Ask yourself these questions, What is the importance of your life? What is the what is the aim? What do you want to achieve with this precious? A human life is very precious, When you think about there are 31 realms of existence where we can all go, Most of us, only know 2 or 3 realms where they constantly go. The human realm, the hell realm, the ghost realm, and then the human realm, That's where most of the people go, Some people go up into the Deva realm, But, even then, if they go up to the Deva realm, they won't stay there, forever, They, sooner or later, they will have to receive their evil doings that they did in this life, and then go to hell, And when they go to hell, they come back as a ghost, normally as a ghost, and then come back as a human being. And then we start this circle again. I mean, when do you want to end the circle, You have to think about, you know, think about your time at school. Think about, you know, when you were 2 years old or 3 years old, yeah, when you tried to talk and nobody understand what you were saying, you know, how frustrated you were, yeah. Or when you went to school and did not understand what the teacher said, how frustrated you are. Yeah? I mean, you have to go through it again. And again, and again, and again, unless, yeah, you make a point, you know, and say, okay, I want to find a way out. I want to find the door that opens, yeah? The door of the hamster wheel that we're constantly running but not going anywhere. I want to find the door and open it up and jump out of the cycle of death and birth, yeah? This should be so much motivation to practice, yeah? I mean, if you can't find, you know, I mean, if you can't find this motivation for practice, I can't help him, yeah? It is like, you know, being in the Deva realm. They don't have any motivation for practice. I mean, if everything is nice and fine, I mean, why should I practice, huh? We only, you know, I mean, we have so much dukkha, you know, I mean, in our lives, yeah? Be it mental dukkha or physical dukkha, you know, so I mean, that's why we want to overcome dukkha, yeah? And find a way out. Okay, next question.
Thank you, Ajahn. Next question. Hi, Ajahn Martin. Hope you are well. I have a question. I have an overthinking mind, and the random thoughts often lead me thinking negatively. For example, worried, stressed, panic, and anxious about many things. I tried to quiet my mind through simple meditation practices, but felt that it is not under control. I find it difficult to stop the overthinking mind and counter those negative thoughts that arise. So, may I ask if there are any proven techniques or methods I may practice to better manage the anxiety and be a more positive person? Thank you.
If you have an overthinking mind, use a repetition of the word putto, putto, putto. If you think putto, you cannot think anything else. That is the easiest way. I mean, if you have a lot of negative thoughts, yeah? I mean, not every negative thought, you know, is important, yeah? Look at the negative thoughts that constantly come and then attack them, yeah? Now change them into a positive thought, yeah? I mean, it is very, very easy. You have a negative thought, you know, and then you ask yourself the question, what can I learn from this? Huh? What can I learn? Yeah? Because the moment you ask yourself, it doesn't matter if it is a negative thought or a negative memory or a negative situation. The moment you ask yourself, what can I learn from it, it's already positive. Yeah? You change, you know, you turn around, you know, you turn around it, yeah? What can you learn from it, yeah? These negative thoughts, you know, lots of people, especially in the West, have this, yeah? I mean, they can't accept themselves, yeah? Or they can't, in the same way they can't accept others. Eh? You have to learn how to accept yourself. Eh? Accept yourself that you are evil. Accept yourself that you are good. You have both parties within you. Yeah? You have the good and you have the evil. Yeah? If we just look at our evil, of course we get very negative. But we can also look at our good. Yeah? And then we get positive. And some people only look at their good, so they forget that they are evil, yeah? This is the way, you know, somebody asked me about being honest. Being honest that we have good sides and bad sides, yeah? If you don't want to see the bad sides, the first thing is we look at the bad sides, you know, and rip them out of our heart, yeah? Once we see, you know, the cause for our bad sides, yeah? I mean, be it envy, be it hatred, or be it whatever it is, you know. I mean, it is, there is a cause within our heart, yeah. And this cause we can remove, yeah. But we have to be able to find it. And the first thing, and the most important thing, and the most difficult thing is to accept, yeah. That's why last time I said, you know, I look at the world, you know, because it is a mirror of yourself, yeah. So what you see in others is within you, yeah. I mean, how many people can accept that? How many people can accept that? Yeah? No, I'm not that. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Of course you are. Yeah? Because you get frustrated about this behavior or that behavior. Yeah? Yes, you are. Maybe not to the same, yeah? maybe not to the same degree as that person, but you still have it within you. Otherwise, you know, you would feel meta for this person, because you yourself has overcome this difficulty, and you know how much, yeah, how much this person suffers, so that he behaves in this nasty way. Yeah? I mean, this person behaves in a nasty way because he suffers so much, yeah? But we don't want to see the suffering. We only see his nasty behavior, and then we get aggressive, yeah? I mean, this is the worst type of reaction we can have. I don't know, was the question asked? I completely lost myself, yeah?
Yeah, so he's asking if there are any techniques or methods to stop the overthinking mind.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yes.
The negative thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yes, it was pretty much answered, yeah? I mean, he has to use Buddha, yeah? And when there's a permanent negative thought, he has to turn it around, yeah? If they are just negative thoughts, you know, and they are not the same, you know, I mean, just forget them and replace them with Buddha, yeah? And then sooner or later, you know, only the important thoughts, you know, that point down to something, some problem in his own heart. I mean, he has to attack it, you know? I mean, getting interested, what can I learn from this, yeah? What can I learn from it, yeah? Or dig down, where is the cause of it, yeah? But you have to have samadhi, yeah? And don't think about it. You cannot solve this problem of negative thoughts with thinking about it. Yeah? This will spin around, and there will be no solution. You have to look at it, yeah? With samadhi, with the awareness, you know, look at it, you know. Huh? Just see this one thought, you know, look at it, you know, and look, you know, where it's coming from. What is the source? Why am I thinking like this? Yeah? Sometimes it's not. Yeah? Okay, sit down. Yeah. Where are you from?
Latvia.
Okay, so next question.
Next question. How come we are all in the same present?
What does it mean? How? I mean, at this time, you know, in this year, you know, there are certain amount of beings, you know, when he talks about the human race, yeah, huh, that are here. But most of the beings, you know, are in other realms, yeah. And when they are born, you know, then we are somewhere in another realm, yeah. How are we in the present? We are always in the present, yeah. No matter if we are human beings or ghosts, you know, or animals, or in the hell realm, or wherever we are, yeah. We are always present, yeah. Unless, you know, we find a way out, you know, where we are not present anymore, but we're still there. Strange question, you know. She should have a follow-up question, yeah, or he, yeah. So next question.
And the other is from the same person. Could I live 10 seconds in the future if I knew how?
Could you live in the future?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're good at samadhi, you know, I mean, you will know the future. The future is here, yeah, just like the past is here. When you go into Apana Samadhi, the future and the past are one and the same thing, yeah? In the present moment, yeah? Because there's no time. And it's always there. Yeah? So some people can see the future, some people, you know, I mean, 10 seconds, why does she want to see the future? Yeah? Yeah? To program herself, yeah? To be stupid? Because that's what people do, yeah? They want to know what is happening in an hour, you know, so that they can prepare themselves, yeah? And that, yeah, preparing themselves for a situation, yeah, that they assume that will happen, will give wrong results. Yeah? Being away in every moment, yeah, I mean, gives the best result. And we don't make any mistakes, yeah, because we are aware of all these opportunities. If you think about it, you know, I mean, what is happening in 10 seconds or 10 minutes, yeah? Right? We program ourselves, you know, to react like this or react like that, what we think is the best reaction, yeah? And it is always the worst reaction that we can, yeah? Because we don't know what is happening. We only see one side of this, yeah, future, yeah? We don't see all the other opportunities that we have in this moment, yeah? Just like us, you know, I mean, just like we live our life, yeah? I mean, we work, we go to work, you know, I mean, we see only, we are so tunnel-viewed, yeah? We don't see all these opportunities, yeah? That are happening every moment, yeah? That are open to us, yeah? And that we don't choose because, I mean, we are already in the future, yeah? When we go to our office, yeah? When we go to our office or workplace, we are already in the future. What am I going to do there? We don't see anything that is happening on the street or in the car or whatever, yeah? That's why I said deprogram yourself, you know, and be free every moment present, yeah? I mean, that's the best way how you can live, yeah? And then you don't need to know the future. Yeah? And that's no purpose of it. Yeah? Okay?
Next question. This one. Okay, so in a Dhamma talk with disciples, Ajahn Martin dresses simpler than when collecting alms or during meal time, when he's dressed more traditionally. Shuparo, what is the reasoning behind it? Can Ajahn please explain how the Buddha or Thai monks approach the Theravadin monk dress code? Thank you.
When you go on alms round, I mean, it is in the Vinaya, yeah? How you dress, yeah? I mean, the dress code is in the Vinaya. When there's a Sangha meeting, you have to have all your three principal robes, yeah? When you go out for alms, you have to have your three principal robes on, yeah? But when you are in the monastery, when you do meditation, there's no need, yeah, to have your three principal robes, yeah? When you sometimes see me in the evening talks, yeah? I mean, after the Padimok, of course, then we have our principal robes on, yeah? But now it is not necessary, yeah? I mean, if a monk comes, you know, then I might put my jivan on, yeah? Or I normally put my jivan on, yeah? Because it is nice and polite way to greet somebody. But here in the monastery, I mean, we are free to dress the way that we like, yeah?
Okay, next question. How would Ajahn respond or approach someone who says, only bad people go to Buddhist temple? What might the intent be behind such a person's remark?
Can you explain that to me, brother?
People go to Buddhist temple.
Okay, yeah, so there's someone who says, only bad people go to Buddhist temple.
Bad people?
Yeah, go to Buddhist temple. So that's the quotation. Yeah. So how would Ajahn respond or approach someone who says that? What's the intent behind this person's remark?
I don't know because he probably hates, you know, he hates Buddhism. I don't know what his intent is. Yeah, I mean, I have to meet the person who actually says it. Yeah, but I would smile and ask this person, you know, why does he think like that? What is
maybe
the reason?
Like, in a case like, if you're a good person, you don't need to go to the temple.
I mean, he's Christian or what? Yeah. The good Christian don't need to go to church, only the bad Christians need to go to church. I mean, this is, yeah, I mean, I don't know. I can't say anything. You know, I would ask the person, why does he think like that? Yeah. I mean, there's no reason behind it. Yeah. And there's no good person and there's no bad person, as I've explained before, yeah? Every good person has a very bad side, you know, every bad person has a good side, yeah? Yeah? So, I mean, going to a temple, you know, to get better over the time, yeah? But anyway, you know, I mean, I just would smile, you know, and push it away, yeah? Just like when they say, you know, I mean, Ajahn, you're full of shit. That's it. Yeah, why do you think like that? Yeah? Yeah. Or you're arrogant. You know, lots of people think I'm arrogant. Yeah. Yeah, why do you think like this? You know, I mean, tell me, explain me. Yeah, I'm not getting angry at this person. Yeah, I just want to understand why he thinks I'm full of shit. And when you ask them the question, they don't know the answer. Yeah. Even when you ask them, yeah, I mean, when they say, "Oh, you're so arrogant," why do you think it? You know, give me some examples. They don't know the answer. Huh? Okay. Same thing, yeah. Just ask them, yeah. Ask them with a smile on your face. You know, why do you think like this? Huh?
Okay. So, Ajahn, next question. Dear Longpo, in your recent talk, you mentioned tithes, give, and whatever good or bad the recipient monk does with the money, that is the monk's karma to bear. So my follow-up question is, sometimes we give to an organization in good faith.
Yeah.
If the organizer did not carry out as promised, do we carry the blame of being not investigating properly and doing things without wisdom? I recall during tsunami, an organization asked for donations of clothing. It was years later I found that the donated clothes were still sitting in the storeroom, not dispatched. Are we free from blame for trusting the organizer? Was there any merits from such giving, even though the tsunami victims never received them?
No, we are not to blame, but we should use a little bit of wisdom, you know, especially if it's organization, yeah? I mean, investigate it a little bit, and if you have the feeling it's okay, then give, yeah? And what they do, you know, what they do with whatever you give is their problem, it's their karma, yeah? But your good karma in giving something will never be spoiled by any bad doings of the other people. So, your karma is good, yeah? But, you know, I know that in the West, yeah, and people look, you know, if they are doing the right thing, yeah. I mean, if you just have the impression that they are doing the right thing, they just give, you know, and don't be concerned what they do with it, yeah? Because your part is over, yeah. I mean, if you find out later that they didn't do it, then don't give it again, yeah. Don't be stupid, yeah. Well, Lord Buddha never said, you know, we should get stupid, yeah. We should get wiser, yeah? But the first time, you know, you give to this organization, and then you see they do good with it, yeah? And then it's fine, and you can give again, yeah? And then you see they do bad with it, you know, and then you don't give again, and then you give to somebody else, yeah? But the important thing is giving is always a good merit, yeah? No matter who you give to, yeah? Even if you give it to an animal, you know, even if you have some running dogs, you know, street dogs, you know, I mean, you take them, yeah, and give them to a dog care facility, you know, and then give them some money and take care of the dog. I mean, it's good karma. Yeah? And this good karma, you know, will come back, you know, several times, yeah. I think for an animal it's 100 times, you know, for a human being it can be 1,000 times, you know. And the same good karma comes back to you. I can't remember, can't recall the exact, it's about this, yeah. So think about, but also for the bad things, yeah? If you get angry, if you punch somebody, you know, you get back, if it's a person, you get it back 1,000 times, yeah? If you do bad to an animal, you get it back 100 times, yeah? And sometimes you are even born as an animal to get it back, yeah? Also, be careful of what you do. So, next question.
Yeah, sorry, okay, so just following up on just now the question, right? So, the point in time whereby this person receives the merit is when she gives up the clothes, right? Not when, say, the intended victims receive
the clothes. That's right. The moment she gives, you know, I mean, it's the end, the donation is done. She gives it to a person or to the organization, and they receive it, yeah? They have to receive it, then it's done. The merit is done. And then she doesn't have any part in it at all. Yeah.
Okay. Next question. There are some domestic dogs that went cranky and ended up biting people. If the victim reports, then the dog will most likely be put to sleep. if victim doesn't report, then other people may become victims in future. What is the right thing to do? If the police inquire, do we just tell the truth without feeling guilty and let the karma of the dog decide its fate?
If you are the owner of the dog, then of course you have to take care of it, yeah? If you're not the owner of the dog, I mean, if you see that it attacks people, yeah, it's not good karma, you know, don't let the dog, you know, I mean, we can educate dogs, yeah? So, I mean, give it to a shelter, you know, dog shelter, yeah? Or advise the people of the dog shelter, there's a dog, you know, that attacks other people, huh? If it is your dog, you know, you have to take care of it, and you take responsibility also for it, yeah? Don't let the dog, you know, just act out its karma, because, you know, it's getting worse and worse and worse, yeah?
Okay, next question. I used to be able to do daily reflection. However, lately it's becoming more and more difficult. Kilesas seem to cause havoc. At times, my reflection just stopped halfway, and I didn't have the sati to even realize it. Also, I find that on days when I either practice very hard or wasting time, even though I have the intention to do reflection, to let my chitta see how I spend those days, but I usually end up doing no reflection. Daily reflection seems to be getting tougher, not easier for me. What can I do to overcome these obstacles?
Do it. Everybody of us knows it, you know. I mean, it's the more we see, the more the kilesas get angry, yeah? And the more they try to avoid. The kilesas don't want to see what they are doing. They are children that want to play. They don't want to see the results of their actions, yeah? So if somebody, you know, if we observe a child what it's doing constantly, you know, I mean, it will act very differently from when we are not observing it, yeah? So it's the same with the kilesas. They get really angry. The closer we come, you know, the more we understand how they work, yeah? I mean, the kilesas love to work in the dark, yeah? I mean, if you shed light on it, yeah, I mean, you see how they actually trick you all the time, yeah? And of course, you know, I mean, they lose their power if you see through them, yeah? If you see through their tricks, they lose their power. They cannot pull you anymore in this direction because you have seen through it, yeah? So that's why they put up so much resistance to this kind of investigation of this daily reflection, yeah? So you have to overcome it. That's the only way, yeah? You remind yourself, yeah? Yes, it happens here also to the practitioners. When I ask them, you know, did you do your daily reflection? What was, oh yeah, there was something like this. Yeah. Yeah. Because of the kilesas, they don't want to see. So, I mean, think about it. I mean, the more difficult it is, yeah, actually, you know, it is a good sign, yeah? The more you see, yeah? Because the more they put up the resistance, the closer you look at their tricks, yeah? So it's actually a good sign, so continue, yeah?
Okay, thank you, Ajahn. So that's all for the questions that were submitted. I think, Jivaka, you have another thing, another question for us?
Yeah, go ahead. What is
it? I found,
No, it's still too late.
My question is about, like, so you mentioned about these other realms of existence, and also, like, I also, like, to know, like, what to do to get access possible to memories. Like, I can get, like, to a state where that I don't have any thoughts or memories, and I have, like, a good, I guess, kind of samadhi, but I don't, I'd like to know, like, how to access these memories, like, the past life memories or other realms of existence. What do we need to do when we are in a state of samadhi? I mean, I guess we can't do because we are in samadhi, but how do we get into accessing these other realms or past life memories?
If it is important, yeah, I mean, we have to develop it. The daily reflection is the best way how to develop your memories, yeah? That's where you can develop it, you know, and the more you develop it, the faster they come up, yeah? I mean, they are stored somewhere, yeah? You need to have to access to them. You know? What you can do is, you know, when you come out of samadhi, you know, yeah? Or before you even go into samadhi, yeah? If you have a specific memory that you want to contact, yeah? Then before you go into samadhi, said, I want to contact this memory when you come out of samadhi, yeah? And then try to contact it, yeah? I mean, it takes training. Everything takes training. Remember how you learn to talk and to walk and to, yeah? And everything, how to write and to read, yeah? It takes time, yeah? Also this, yeah? Also go back, you know, I mean, to use the memory, go back, you know, go back this year, yeah? I mean, what was happening this year, yeah? And then go back last year, you know, 1 year ago, and then go back, until you come to the day of birth, yeah? And then see what's happened. Maybe you can go, you know, you can go and see yourself, you know, while you're in the womb, you know, or go back into the last life, yeah? Some people are able to do that, yeah? It's all in the memory, yeah? But this kind of memory is not in the brain, yeah? This kind of memory is in the heart, yeah? The heart has all the memories of everything what you have done, you know, in these billions or trillions of lives that you have lived, yeah? It is the way how to access it. And the way, you know, the way to access it is actually through samadhi. But also through training your memory, through this daily reflection, or going back in time, what did I do last year, what I did do, you know, this year, the year before and before, until you come to your school years, you know, and then until you come to your kindergarten years, until you see how you learn to walk, or how you learn to talk. And then these memories, they come up, yeah? And then you can address them. Okay.
So that means that I have to do them concurrently, right? I guess like try to remember what I learned like previously and also do the samadhi and then they will like come together and then.
Yeah. These things, you know, I mean recollection. I call it recollection, you know, going back in time, you know, of your life. This is one recollection. The daily reflection is one recollection. You don't do that, you do it after samadhi, because that's where it is most effective, yeah? When your mind is concentrated, yeah? When you want to have a specific memory, yeah? And if you're good at samadhi, before you go into samadhi, yeah? Address this specific memory, I want to have this, and then go into samadhi, and then after you come out of samadhi, look for it. Maybe it is there, maybe it's not there.
Thanks, sir.
Okay, so I mean, if in Brunei there are no more questions, yeah. I didn't see Linda. Where's Linda?
Linda is here.
I've sent in my question number already. Be answered. Thank you.
Okay. I'm still waiting for you to come. Yeah. I mean. Being afraid, you know. I mean, yes, we are born to die, you know. Remember that, yeah? Sooner or later, every one of us will die, yeah? Huh? So make the most out of it, yeah? And just sitting there in Brunei, you know, it's not so helpful, you know. Come over to Thailand, yeah? Afraid of COVID, yeah? COVID is gone! Huh? Even Bill Gates stated it, you know. We were wrong, you know, it's just a flu that, you know, I mean, bothers old people, you know, and the death rate is not so big. I mean, I just saw a clip, you know, on YouTube. I mean, they, just like the Kilesas, they constantly fool us, they constantly trick us, yeah? And now they're going to trick us with this monkeypox, yeah? And then everybody has to get 3 shots for the monkeypox, yeah? And after this monkeypox, you know, goes out, and then the next one, and then we have to get 3 shots for this, and we have to get 3 shots for that. I mean, never ends, yeah? The pharma industry is very clever in inventing every year's new kind of illnesses, you know, that they can cure with some sort of pharmaceutical, yeah? So, Don't fall for this, yeah. I mean, if you fall for your kilesas, yeah, no, I mean, of course you will fall for the tricks. They use the same thing, and they started how the kilesas work, yeah? And they use it to trick you, yeah? And, oh, so afraid, so afraid, so afraid. We die only one reason, yeah? And this reason is because our karma is gone. Our karma, you know, our karma of being a human being, you know, is gone, yeah? We used it up, yeah? And that's why we die. Yeah? The Lord Buddha never said we die because of heart attack, of cancer, of whatsoever, yeah? Of a stroke, yeah? Or of this sickness or that sickness. We die because only of one reason, yeah? Because our karma, yeah? Our karma to be a human being is at its end. That's why also devas die, you know, and that's also why beings in hell, you know, I mean, the moment they used up their karma, they come back. That is the only reason, yeah. Being so afraid of all these things. Huh? Why are you not afraid of doing bad, evil, huh? This you're never afraid. You're always afraid of death, huh? Or you're afraid of pain, yeah? But you're not afraid to do evil. Yeah? I mean, if you would be so afraid of doing evil like you're afraid of death, I mean, this would be a great thing, yeah? Okay? So, I mean, then join the classes, yeah? If there are no more questions, yeah?
We have time for one last question, I think. Someone raised their hand. Hold on. Joanna, go ahead.
Yes, this is a great opportunity. I'm grateful. I'm talking about the health. I'm wondering how much energy should I put into taking care of my physical body, taking vitamins, going and exercising. I want to be strong and healthy, but how much focus should I put on eating enough protein, working out?
This is all the Western. Yeah.
All those things.
This is all the Western approach, you know. With this, I can only give you a sort of guidance, yeah. I mean, if you're good in meditation, yeah, look at the food that you eat and look how the body absorbs the food and how it feels afterwards, yeah. This is the best way. Don't look for other people, you know, what they are doing, yeah. You have to look, you have a special body that reacts to special things in a very certain way, yeah. You know it from people have this kind of allergy, this people have that kind of allergy if they eat this food, and we actually grow healthy if we eat the same kind of food, yeah. I mean, just in the Western, you know, there's a saying, one man's poison is the other man's medicine. Yeah? Have this in mind. So you have to look, yeah? I mean, what we're doing here is, I mean, we have the time, you know, to look at the food. How is this food processed? How is this food, you know, giving us strength? Or how is this food, you know, giving us strength for our immune system? Yeah? Don't look too much, you know, what other people are saying, you know, when you're good at practice, yeah? Of course, if you don't practice, then you have to listen to these people, yeah? Yeah, they have a rather good understanding of what is happening in the body. But we as meditators have a much better understanding of how the body processes this food. Yeah, how the body, you know, I mean, deals with the food that is given to it. Yeah, and you actually would know, you know, today you're craving for this kind, you know, for this kind of food. Yeah, so maybe it is good for you. Yeah, then eat it, you know, and test it out. Yeah. And look, you know, if it is really good for you, yeah. So I mean, if you're really aware of what is going on within your body, I mean, you don't have to ask other people, you know, what you need to eat, yeah.
It gets so confusing listening to so many different voices.
Yes, and that is the same thing, you know. And it's not only with the doctors, and it's also the same thing with the Dhamma teachers, yeah. You get so confused because this person says this person said that, you know. In the end, you don't know, yeah? And maybe even they say the same thing, you know, some of the people, yeah? like the Thai people, I know quite a few Thai people, you know, who go went to see this kind of Arahant, that Arahant, and everybody teaches something different. But in the essence, it's all the same. But they understand it differently, you know, and then they get confused and they can't practice at all. Because every time they, oh no, this teacher said this, that teacher said this, now what shall I do? Yeah? Because they didn't get the essence of it. Yeah. So too many, I mean, in German we say too many cooks, you know, I mean, you know, waste the food, yeah? Okay?
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so Zani, let's close up then.
Yes. Thank you, Thailand, for guiding us and answering all the questions today. Let's all pay respects to Thailand together. Bye. Okay. Thank you, everyone. See you again next time.
Okay. And practice then. So, what is the name of the person from Latvia?
Ernest.
Huh?
Ernest.
Oh, Ernest.
Yeah.
I mean, he has been here before, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, then. Make the mind calm. I mean, stick with the Buddha, you know. Hope, you know, I mean, it is your lifesaver, you know, I mean, you have to catch on, yeah, otherwise the mind goes off in thinking, you know, use it as a lifesaver, yeah? Yeah. And you women, you know, live in harmony, yeah, huh, it's the same with the maize, yeah, female, chicken, yeah. I mean, we don't have so many chickens in Bantad. It was so easy to see, yeah? The male chickens, yeah? And the female chickens and how they behave, yeah? And you could one-to-one, you know, onto the female humans and the male humans, yeah? It's so amazing, you know, you just see. Of course, they have been humans before, you know? I mean, now they have become chickens, yeah? Constantly fighting, constantly wanting this, you know, constantly. Oh. Just remember what I said, you know? I mean, whatever we see in the other person is within us, yeah? Okay, so. This is, you know, we end, yeah? We end the session. These are questions from the...
No, they're mostly just some questions, but there's like two or three emails questions.